Throughout late 1991 and 1992, Linux evolved at a breakneck pace. Contributions started trickling, then flooding in bug fixes, device drivers, patches to add features. The process was organic and chaotic. Linux issued updates frequently, often several in a single week, incorporating whatever patches people sent that made sense. It was a style of development that would later be dubbed release early, release often, and it became a cornerstone of the open source approach. Linus also proved to be a pragmatic and easygoing leader. Linus trusted contributors to take charge. His approach, open, fast, and decentralized, seemed chaotic, but it worked. Linux improved rapidly with each release. By early 1992, Linux was gaining attention as a fast, free kernel. When combined with the user tools and utilities from the GNU project, like the compiler, shell, and libraries, it became a fully working operating system. Stallman's GNU had spent years building everything except the kernel, the part that talks directly to the hardware. Linux, meanwhile, had written just that missing piece. His Linux kernel filled the gap GNU hadn't yet completed. The result was something neither could achieve alone, a fully free, Unix-like OS, built by two different people, chasing different goals, that happened to align at just the right time. But not everyone was impressed. In January 1992, a fiery debate erupted between Linus and his own inspiration, Professor Andrew Tannenbaum. Tannenbaum criticized Linux for its monolithic kernel, calling it a giant step back into the 1970s. Linus, fiercely protective, shot back that Minix was brain-damaged. The debate drew even more attention to the project. Realizing his initial restrictive license was holding back collaboration, Linus made another pivotal decision. He switched Linux to Richard Stallman's GNU General Public License, or GPL. This ensured Linux would always remain free and, crucially, made it legally compatible with the vast library of GNU tools. The body finally had its heart. With the kernel stabilized, the community faced a new challenge, making it usable. This sparked the desktop wars. One group of developers created KDE, a powerful and polished graphical desktop, but it was built on a programming toolkit, Qt, whose license wasn't considered fully free by Stallman and the GNU project. In response, the GNU project initiated its own effort, GNOME. It was a direct reflection of Stallman's uncompromising idealism, a desktop built with a purely free software stack. This rivalry between the pragmatic KDE and the idealistic GNOME was intense, and it drove years of incredible innovation in the quest to make Linux user-friendly. All of this chaotic, decentralized progress was finally given a name by hacker philosopher Eric S. Raymond. In his 1997 essay, The Cathedral and the Bazaar, he contrasted traditional top-down software development, the Cathedral, with Linux's open, peer-to-peer model, the Bazaar. He coined Linus's law, given enough eyeballs, all bugs are shallow. As the decade closed, this bazaar was about to become big business. A company called Red Hat had begun packaging Linux into an easy-to-install distribution, but their genius was in their business model. They gave the software away for free and sold support, service, and certification. In 1999, Red Hat's IPO was a massive success on Wall Street. The hobby project had officially hit the big time. The world was taking notice. In 2000, the ultimate validation came. IBM, a titan of the old computing world, announced it would invest $1 billion in Linux. This move signaled to corporations everywhere that Linux was ready for serious, mission-critical work. But as Linux rose, it awakened a giant. Microsoft, the undisputed king of software, saw this free operating system not as a curiosity, but as a threat. Linux is a cancer that attaches itself, in an intellectual property sense, to everything it touches. Microsoft launched a campaign of fear, uncertainty, and doubt, or FUD, publishing studies to prove that its own Windows operating system was cheaper and better. But the real threat was yet to come. In 2003, a company called the SCO Group sued IBM for $1 billion. The claim was explosive. That proprietary Unix code, which SCO claimed to own, had been illegally copied into the Linux kernel. It was an existential threat. If SCO won, Linux could be mired in legal battles for years, or worse, be forced to pay royalties on every copy. The lawsuit was a battle for the very soul of open source. The entire community rallied, and after years of brutal legal warfare, the courts sided with IBM and the Linux community. The project was safe. Out of this crucible of conflict, a new vision emerged. In 2004, a South African tech entrepreneur named Mark Shuttleworth founded Canonical. His goal was to create a version of Linux that directly answered the FUD. He called it Ubuntu, an African word meaning humanity to others. Its slogan was Linux for human beings, and it was focused on one thing, making Linux easy to install and use for everyone. Having survived corporate attacks and legal battles, the Linux project needed to mature. In 2007, the Linux Foundation was formed. A neutral nonprofit, it took on the role of stewarding the project, hosting its infrastructure, and employing Linus Torvalds and other key developers like Greg Crowe-Hartman, who maintains the stable kernel today. It was the professionalization of the revolution. The Foundation's members include the biggest names in technology, Google, Oracle, Intel, Amazon, and in a final stunning irony, one of its top contributors today is Microsoft. The old enemy had joined the revolution. While the year of the Linux desktop never quite came to pass in the way the community had hoped, Linux won in a much bigger way. It became the invisible backbone of the digital world. It runs the servers for Google, Facebook, and Amazon. It powers nearly all of the world's 500 fastest supercomputers. it's in your smart TV, your car, and the New York Stock Exchange. And through Android, it's in the pockets of billions of people. The revolution didn't happen by overthrowing the king. It happened by building the foundation for a new world right under his feet. It's a story that proves that passionate people sharing code across borders can change the world, not by planning a revolution, but by accidentally starting one in a Helsinki dorm room.